evening and welcome to Bird Calls from Red River Radio and our Knoll Foundation studios. Tonight's program is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. And we invite you to call in tonight with your questions about our feathered friends and the avian world at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Cliff Shackelford is our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio, and he is ready to answer your questions about birds tonight. Cliff is currently the statewide non-game ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, a position he has had since 1997, and he has been an avid bird watcher for more than 30 years. He is also the first author of the book, Hummingbirds of Texas, published in 2005 by Texas A&M University. And he has authored over 70 publications on birds and birding. He and his wife, Julie, and their two children live in East Texas. Cliff, thanks for joining us again tonight.
Hey, Bill. Glad to be here.
And we'd like to extend a special thank you to all the well-wishers. Unfortunately, we had an illness in January, and we're unable to do the show then. This is our reschedule of that show. However, I regret to inform you that rumors of Cliff's illness were greatly exaggerated, since it was actually I who was sick last month. Cliff was in perfect health, but he does appreciate all the concern.
Yeah, it was amazing, all the texts and emails I got, and I was like, no, it's not me, doggone it, it's Bill.
It's good to have fans. I have no fans, so, you know, hey, what is it? Well, anyways, we do appreciate that, and we're sorry that we couldn't make it last month, but we are back here right now, and of course, we have a show coming up in March as well, so we're going to have a back-to-back one here
for
Bird
Calls.
Yeah, so you can still give us a call right now at 800-552-8502 with your questions about birds tonight. And as usual, we're going to go into last month's conservation tip to start off our program. Remind us what that was and what we can do to help our bird and wildlife populations.
Yeah, last time we talked about brush piles and leaving brushy fence rows for birds. And so I start off saying that one person's trash might be another bird's sanctuary. And so we talked a little bit about at the end of the show last episode was just think about piling up a few limbs or brush on your property instead of shredding it or getting it hauled off or burning it, because those brush piles can be good homes for birds. They can also provide nest material for the breeding season where they can get bark and limbs and sticks and twigs that they can use to build a nest. So leave your brush piles. And we also talked about keeping those it saves you on a lot of work because you don't have to make everything beautiful in the sense of a golf course, because for birds, beauty sometimes might be that dead tree on the ground or that stick pile. So we just had a tree last weekend fall on the fence line with my neighbor, and he noticed it, and he cut the half that was leaning over in his yard. He moved it off. I don't know what he did with it. And I said, I'm just going to lay this log right down here on the ground. And that generates food for a lot of birds later on. So
sure, underneath that log, great place for bugs to hide.
That's right.
Birds love bugs.
So to me, leaving those things are beautiful. And to have a dead tree standing, we talked about snags in the past.
Right.
Some people think that's terrible looking. And it's not supposed to be hanging over the house, I agree. But if it's not going to fall on anything, there are a lot of birds that use dead trees when they're standing up. A lot of raptors will sit on them. A lot of woodpeckers will forage on them. And then when they fall down and become a log, we talked about that in previous episodes too, that's good habitat for things. Pileated woodpeckers, for example, in our listening area will feed on logs on the ground. There's a whole bunch of insects, beetles going on inside that log. So, you're playing the pileated.
I got a bird for everything. Actually, Cliff has a bird for everything.
So, we're listening to the pileated there in the background. But, yeah, so leave brush piles. Leave some fence rows that are brushy. That might be where an unusual Buick's wren might be in our listening area. It might be where the Harris's sparrows and the white-crowned sparrows might be as well.
I have to laugh because it was like a week or so ago, I saw a little meme on Facebook, and it was the picture of an old car. You know, you've seen them, old rusty cars. Somebody had actually put dirt on the inside of the car, and they made a planter out of it.
Oh,
and it
cool.
had all of these different flowers and stuff coming out of it, and they turned it into a piece of decorative, you know, art, you
yeah.
know. Basically, the car's going to rust away to nothing eventually, but in the meantime, the plants are eating
That's
it.
Right.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
That'd be neat to see a hummingbird go in there and feed on anything that was flowering.
Yeah,
yeah. That'd be a cool thing. It's
one of the things, you know, eco-landscaping. You know, you've heard of zero-scaping and things like that. Different environments require different kinds of landscaping
right.
for a good, healthy environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want, a good, healthy environment for all of the wildlife that naturally lives in our area to keep that plentiful, you know. And part of that is you want to go out and fish, you got to have good fish and you got to have good waters. You want to go out and see birds, you got to have places for them to habitate and hide and feed.
Right.
Well, now, last month we talked about birds, and this month we're going to play another bird for you. We have our spotlight bird for you this month, and could you tell us about this bird?
The bird we're profiling today is the house finch, so let's first listen to this recording that we have for the house finch.
Sounds like a small bird.
It's a small bird, yes. He's sparrow-sized. And its song is a steady warble that it often begins with a husky whistle, and yet it ends with a deeper buzzy note. And then its call, which you can hear right there, is a single mellow buzzy note. Let's listen again. There it called, and now it's in this thing. There's a blue jay mixed in there. But the house finch, the former name was linnet, L-I-N-N-E-T. It's now a familiar backyard bird that occurs year-round in the Red River Radio listening area, but that wasn't always the case, and I'll clarify that in just a minute. But the house finch is often misidentified and confused with the similar-looking purple finch, which is an uncommon and irregular winter visitor. But the house finch sports a brighter shade of red. The female house finch is a dingy brown with heavy streaks and speckles. She has no red. These birds visit our backyard seed feeders with a vengeance. And during the breeding season, they often place their nests in hanging baskets or potted plants on the porch. There's a pathogenic bacterium that causes a form of conjunctivitis that spread rapidly through house finches across the eastern U.S. This disease is commonly known as the house finch eye disease. And some people will find individuals outside. They'll see them. They'll see they have red or swollen or runny or crusty eyes. And there's really nothing you can do if you're a concerned backyard birder. You know, we don't just grab birds and take them to the vet, wild birds and take them to the vet. So there's really nothing you can do, except you could regularly clean your feeder and your bird bath. That would help reduce the spread of infection of the house finch eye disease. And it's unique to the house finch, so it's not really spreading to other birds. So originally a Western species, the house finch, they were introduced in the 1940s in New York to spritz up the city with their bright color and their lively song. And what's interesting is those eastern birds quickly spread westward like wildfire. And within half century, they met the original population, which is basically around the Interstate 35 corridor in Texas, roughly. And today, the bird distribution across Texas is virtually seamless. And I remember their arrival in East Texas in the late 1980s, followed soon by breeding, and then at last to the permanency that we see today.
Now, was this a natural arrival? They just kind of migrated on their own, found a new homeland? Or was this something, you know, on the order of invasive species? Somebody brought them over, that kind of thing?
So they were out west, and before 1900s, they didn't occur all the way through the hill country. So somebody took some birds in the 40s, like I mentioned, and moved them to New York, and those birds spread, and you know, especially in urbanized areas, they don't do so well out in the country as much as they do in the cities. So within 50 years, those birds from New York just started expanding and moving westward, and the western birds slowly expanded, and they eventually met in the I-35 corridor, probably in the 80s or 90s. Because I remember in Nacogdoches, it was, I think, 1989 is when they first showed up. So they would have been in Shreveport probably about that time, or maybe even sooner. But so that probably the indication is that the birds we have are from those birds that were introduced. So they're native, but they were moved somewhere where they weren't native.
Right.
So it gets a little sticky how you classify them.
Right.
But the point is now they're all over Texas from east to west, and they're even into Louisiana now. But where we are right now, they would not have been here 50 years ago. So they're a recent addition to the bird life here.
It sounds ironically almost like the dog that got lost in California and makes his way back to, New York. These are the birds that got lost in New York and are trying to make their
That's
way back
right.
to the West.
Well, what's interesting, the difference is, though, it's the many generations of baby
right. yeah.
house finches later that made their
right.
way back.
Yeah.
So that is kind of interesting. It's not you that's going back home. It's your great,
yeah.
great, great, great grandkids that are.
trying to think of an analogy from literature, but forget about it. This brings us to the next section of our show. By the way, we are taking calls tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question concerning birds, the birding world, and our avian friends, you can give us a call right now and we'll answer them online. Give us a call again, 800-552-8502. We had some pictures sent in after the last show, and as it turns out, I believe that's relevant to our topic here.
Yeah, and these are feeder birds here, and there is a house finch amongst American goldfinches, and these are online, right, for people to look at
yes.
if they'd like to. And this is a really common – the goldfinch is a really common backyard bird this time of the year, and they're not – bright canary yellow this time of the year. They're pretty dull olivey. Some have some bright hints of yellow on the head, but the black and white wings, I think, are really the best field mark. And they're just itty bitty, and they just camp out when you've got thistle or blackwell sunflower seeds. So in the pictures, if anybody wants to go online, you can see a profile view of a bird with a little bit of red on it, and then there's another picture with a butt view of the bird, and that's the house finch. And he's a little bit bigger than the goldfinch, but of course all these guys are smaller than your cardinal. So we're talking about really small birds coming to feeders.
Was there another bird in there as well?
No, I don't think
okay.
there was a third species. So just goldfinches and house finches.
Okay.
Yeah.
And those photos, by the way, were sent in by listener Jill Wright. And we want to thank you very much and give you credit. So.
Yeah.
And again, these are online right now. And if you would like to actually send us a photo either tonight or for a future show, you can do that at redriverradiomail@gmail.com. And we'll get those photographs and try to put them up. We'll get them to Cliff and see if he can go ahead and describe those and name those. You can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502 if you'd like to get your question in right now for Cliff.
Yeah, and the photos don't have to be just super crystal clear. I mean, I prefer that, but don't look at them and say, oh, it's not worthy of being on a magazine cover. I shouldn't send it in. No, these are everyday photos that people take, and if we can see the whole bird, then we can figure out what it is. So, send it in, even if it doesn't belong on the cover magazine. We still want to see it, and especially if you've got a question mark with it. Of I see these in my yard, what is it? It's been, bugging me for years. Can we use that, bugging me?
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
a different
well, what's
show.
Bugging you? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a different show.
We like Beverly. We can use that.
Yep. So, but anyway, what's bothering you, you can call us and we can hopefully figure that out.
All right. And we did have one call that they didn't want to ask their question online, but they said they saw a red hawk crash into a tree and then came out with a squirrel.
Oh.
And they want to know, is this common?
Oh, well, that was probably, if it was red, I mean, there's two hawks with reddish on them that both are fond of squirrels in this area, and that's the red-shouldered hawk and the red-tailed hawk. And where I live, I've seen both of them patrolling urban areas and nabbing squirrels. And so is it common? I'd say, you betcha it's common. And a squirrel is mighty tasty for a hawk, and it's probably not something you want the school kids to watch, the little kindergartners, but it's just the way of life for these raptors. So here we're listening. Let's play it again. This is red-shouldered.
So if you hear that, you got a red-shouldered hawk. Yeah. I don't have the red tail voice here, okay. Unfortunately.
We'll profile him sometime soon. But they both do like squirrels, and that's getting on the big side of what they eat. I mean, red tails are a little bigger than and stronger than red shoulders, and they'll go up to maybe a skunk, especially a small skunk-sized bird. Mammal, I'm sorry. Yeah. But yeah, they love squirrels, and you can see it happen. What's really interesting is when you see them land with it on the ground, especially red tail will spread its wing and try to look big and bad while he's dispatching of the squirrel. And if you come across that view, you'll be like, why is that bird standing there with his wings open like Batman? But if you look carefully, he's got a squirrel down in his talons. He's trying to dispatch of it, and he's trying to look big because he doesn't know who else is paying attention that might say, hey, I can pick on this guy and steal that squirrel that's been dispatched, and I'll eat it.
Because there are thieves in nature.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of thieves in nature. Yep. And
Well, give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. You're listening to Bird Calls with Cliff Shackelford, and we'll take your calls tonight about our avian world. We have our first caller online, Bill from, I believe it's Rainy, Louisiana. Bill, what's your question tonight for Cliff?
I have two concerns about, first, a cardinal that's very pesky, and the second, I'd like to know around a large fish pond where we're culturing tropical fish, how do we keep the white shorebirds from attacking them? Is there some defense that we can put up other than bird netting?
Well, let's start with the fish pond, and then don't let me forget about the pesky cardinal to ask you more about that. But the fish pond, I like to tell people, if you build it, they will come. That's, of course, a quote from that baseball movie, right. Field of Dreams, but it certainly applies here. And the white shorebird is probably a great egret. There are several species of herons and egrets that would just love for you to build a pond and not put fish net on it and fill it full of food. Mm-hmm. And it'd be like us putting our refrigerator on our front porch, filling it with food and beer and walking away without a padlock, and someone's going to enjoy it.
Not recommended.
No, not recommended. I'd say you got to keep your refrigerator locked up inside. And I think that you've got to be ready for the challenge. If you're going to build the pond, stock it with expensive fish, you're going to probably have to invest in the netting because there's really no other way to do it unless you've got a hyperactive dog that's ready 24/7. Because you've got night critters too. You've got raccoons that'll get in there and grab fish quite readily, depending on the footing that they can have. So it's not just a daytime thing. You might start noticing fish gone, even though you're patrolling the daytime. But you got another 8 or 10 hours in the total darkness where there's other critters that are loving what you're doing. So I'd recommend the netting. It's a good investment, and you won't have to probably redo it for a while. So tell me about the pesky cardinal.
Okay, he will sit on the burglar bars of the window and peck on the window.
Mm-hmm.
Then he'll fly off, land back in a like a sweet olive tree, and then he'll come back and attack this window.
Mm-hmm.
Any idea? I mean, is it a reflection issue that he has?
Yeah, it's a mirror image of himself. And remember, these birds have pea-sized brains, and they can't really figure it out. He just sees another male cardinal, and it's his turf, and he doesn't like it. So he's pecking at his reflection, but to him, he thinks it's another bird. So what you can do, if there's a sweet spot, like it sounds like there is, you can tape some butcher paper or newspaper up for a little while on either side of the glass just to kill that reflection. That would really help. And then sometimes he'll move to another window, and you might be prepared to follow him as needed. But this is not uncommon, and cardinals are the number one birds to do this because they're so tied to our backyards. and they're so territorial. We see this a lot, and it really picks up as the breeding season picks up. So it's not – if you have a problem with it right now in the winter months, just wait. You might have a super alpha male that is going to really get after it in the spring and the summer. When I lived in Austin – one of the more common birds to do that in rural areas in the hill country was the roadrunner. And I never saw that. We lived in the city. We didn't have that. But people out in the country would have roadrunners walk up to the window and peck. And, you know, some people think, oh, he's trying to come in. He wants to come in or he wants to be fed. No, the roadrunner sees himself and he's taking a little jab at it, trying to figure out what is this flat surface. But I think it would be so cool to be in the living room and look right there by you a few feet away. And there's a roadrunner trying to peck on his reflection. I'd love to witness that. So, try the paper, the butcher paper or the newspaper, and see if that helps with your cardinal.
Terrific. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Bill.
Now, I'm curious, are there other ways to cut down? Like, I mean, put curtains over your windows. Would that cut the reflection down? Is it the light coming from inside out that helps to create the reflection? Or
The thing to do would be to get outside when it's happening and try the window shades. See if... You know, do the before and after yourself and see if you see your own reflection, or stick your hand up where the bird's sitting and see, do you see your hand? And then have somebody in the house close the shades and see if it disappears. You know, some people put up potted plants. If the bird is sitting on a ledge, you can do that. That's not as ugly as putting up paper. But I don't know, if you have kids like I do, have the kids get some plain butcher paper and draw some pictures. It doesn't matter what they draw. It could be cute little Tinkerbells. Just the fact that you're killing the reflection is all you need to do. It's not that you're putting scary pictures on there to scare the bird away. You're just trying to eliminate that reflection. And so he's probably not going to spend a lot of time hovering and pecking as much as he is going to be sitting and pecking. So you just need to eliminate where there's a perch and window in combination.
But probably shouldn't draw a picture of a cardinal if the kids are probably doing that.
Or maybe do one that's the size of a football.
Right,
And then he'll run away when he sees the Arnold Schwarzenegger cardinal. Right.
Well, you are listening to Bird Calls from Red River Radio, and we are taking your calls tonight. We have all lines open right now. If you'd like to give Cliff a call about anything having to do with our avian world, you can call in right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. If you'd like to shoot us a picture of a bird that you have and you'd like Cliff to identify it, you can send that to redriverradiomail@gmail.com. redriverradiomail@gmail.com. As we, we're in the dead of winter right now, and, some people want to know, well, what can I do now to help the bird population? Is there something I can do in the winter to help the winter birds, or can I make my yard better for the incoming birds that are coming back?
Yeah, it's probably not the best time to do the wildscaping just yet, but it is a good time to put up a bird feeder. And actually, I'm going to give people a little heads up. That's going to be our conservation tip in about half an hour. We're going to end with a brief discussion on bird feeders. So feeding is certainly what you can do. And also just getting out when it's cooler, less pesky bugs, I think is a lot of fun. Although, gosh, it's been so doggone mild. It didn't feel like early February in the last couple days, has it? But what's really neat is I want to mention the great backyard bird count that's put on by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology and the National Audubon Society. And that's coming up, and it's been around for about 17 or 18 years. And what they do is encourage you to pick a spot like your backyard and just for at least 15 minutes count the birds and submit that to them through eBird. And you can Google all this and just Google great backyard bird count, and they'll tell you how to do it. But I'm going to be participating in this event at the SFA, Piney Woods Native Plant Center, in Nacogdoches on Saturday, February 13th from 9 to noon. And so that's a lot of fun. We did it last year, maybe the last couple years. And the folks at the Piney Woods Native Plant Center, like Carrie and Elise, they do a great job bringing people in. And so the thing is, we're going to have some lectures, outdoor, of course. We're going to have some bird hikes, guided bird walks, and then we're also going to look at the feeders and count the birds at the feeders and what we see in the trees. And so that 40 acres there on campus is going to be our backyard patch that we're going to count from. And it's a lot of fun. So if folks are interested, I encourage you to come if you're in the Nacogdoches area. My wife, who's quite the landscaper for wildlife, the wildscaper, she's going to give a little walk and talk on how to landscape for birds and other critters and in the form of creating backyard bird habitat. So she's going to be involved too. Our kids will be there running around having fun. But it's a good family-friendly event. So that'll be Saturday, February 13th at 9 o'clock, and hopefully the weather holds up. But last year we had lots of really good birds, two species of nuthatches. We had really good looks at a couple of hawks. It's just a really neat, fun thing to do and collect data at the same time that we'll submit that goes nationally. And those data are important to a lot of folks.
You are listening to Bird Calls from Red River Radio with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And you can get your calls in tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we got a little snafu with our phone lines, but I think we actually have two people online right now. I'm not sure. But Mike, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. And Kathy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Kathy, hang on. I got you both locked in somehow, but we're going to go with Mike first, and then we'll go with Kathy.
Fine.
Mike, what's your question tonight?
Yes. Down in Woodville, we had some birds show up that sounded like the purple finch that he was talking about earlier, and I was wondering if he could describe them a little bit. We haven't seen them since. This was about 4 years ago or so, 3 years ago.
Hello.
And they looked like a flock of goldfinch, but they were a bluish purple color, and I couldn't figure them out.
Yeah, there's another bird like the goldfinch, about the same size, called the pine siskin, and that's not what you're describing. I thought I'd mention it's heavily streaked, has a little bit of yellowish in the wings when they fly, and but if you saw a bird, I don't know about the bluish purple, but a very purpley plum color is really what the purple finch looks like. So the house finch, though, it looks very similar, but his color is a lot more red. He has a lot more on the chest than the purple finch, because the purple finch's brightest spot is really on the forehead and crown. So it's hard to know what you had 4 years ago, but now I think maybe if you looked in a book and see what a purple finch versus a house finch looks like, you'll be ready if they come back. Because the purple finch is not every year. We'll have some winters where we just cannot find them around, or maybe in small numbers, and then other winters they're in big numbers. But the house finch is here year-round. So if you have a summertime finch, I'm talking heat of summer, that's a house finch. So purple finch.
We have a house finch.
We're okay. Well, so if you saw it near a house finch and it looks similar, but the color is just more of a purpley plum, then you probably had both. And you can see both at your feeders during the winter months. Yeah.
Okay.
Very good.
All right.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. You are listening to Bird Calls from Red River Radio with our resident ornithologist, and you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We're going to go to Kathy now. Kathy from Alexandria, you're online with Cliff. What's your question?
Hi. Well, just a comment. Y'all excuse my voice. I got a little bit of congestion. I was listening to the other person about the cardinal that explained things for me, but what we had a portable building outside and a little tree on the side branch. It's two different years in a row. This I must have been the same bird. It would hop from the branch to the window, the branch to the window, just hours of doing that, pecked that glass. So
yeah,
we covered that up the best we could, but there's one little teeny little spot. It was about maybe 2 inches long, about an inch high, that didn't cover with the paper. That bird would hop from that branch to that little spot back and forth.
You would find it, that sweet spot, yeah.
And then finally, we covered it up, and it moved over to the other window, and it would just hours.
Yeah.
It would be at that window, and then before we moved to where we're at now, Another strange experience, same type bird, that bird would hop, you know, like say of the house from the window outside, you know, it was from branch outside to the window back and forth. But what I didn't understand, maybe y'all could explain, if you go into another room, that same bird would come around and it would keep, it'd jump and hop on that window back and forth, went back into the washroom window there, he'd come back around. Wherever room you were at, that bird would follow you around and peck at that window.
Yeah, I think that's probably purely coincidental, or maybe your movement in the background created some movement according to the bird's view point. But I don't think he's following you as an individual, as a human. No, I don't think that's the case. I think it was either that or, you know, a lot of birds have kind of a routine. And, you know, when they're checking out things, they might have a routine and, okay, I'm going to go this way. I'm going to go to the left side every time and have all the windows to my left. I mean, he's not obviously thinking that way, but if he's doing more of a line, then that's maybe what he was doing.
Yeah, because I could see, Michael, each room I went, it would stay, whatever room I was in, it seemed like it would stay there constantly, flying at that window until I moved, and it wouldn't be very long. There it was again. Oh, that's so strange. Well, uncanny. It would drive you nutty, that constant pecking on the
rest. You just have really good karma, you know? Remember the Pied Piper that the critters would always follow? You're Mrs. Pied Piper.
It was something. But now, another thing, well, could you explain to me, I've never seen, I only saw it one time, it was a bird with brown feathers but a blue chest.
That was probably, I mean, the bluebird can kind of look like that. I'm guessing you know what a bluebird is. Most people do. And are we saying brown, maybe kind of like a little bit, wait, say it again. Brown body with a blue chest?
Yeah, because I thought the bluebirds were just solid blue.
And
the female a little bit lighter.
Right.
This one was a medium brown with a dark blue breast.
Okay, no, I misspoke, because it's always going to be a red breast on a cardinal or some sense of reddish brown, brownish red. You might look in your book for a first-year blue grosbeak. They have some interesting blue, usually on the head, though, first. And I'm trying to think, there's just not a lot of birds with blue on them. I mean, we know the blue jay and the blue bird, the blue gray gnatcatcher is not even blue. In my opinion, it's a gray, but I'm guessing, you know, or a molting indigo bunting, although they would have blue elsewhere too. So, look up blue grosbeak and indigo bunting, and maybe you had a molting bird, a first year bird, cause for sure the blue grosbeak, the young males take 2 years to get the all blue plumage. So they come back there when they're 2 years old, they come back with some blue, not all blue, but it's definitely in the head. They're very blue headed, but I'm not thinking of what else that could be. Cause just, again, there's just not a lot of birds with blue, and I'm talking blue jay blue. There's just not a lot of birds like that. So I'm guessing could it maybe have been the blue in the head and we just got the body parts mixed up maybe?
Well, no, it was brown feathers with a blue chest. I thought, do birds, you know, stay with their own species? I kind of wonder maybe it was a mix of two different genes or something there, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. And then we'd sometimes get lazuli buntings in the area, and those are sometimes young birds that are not fully in their full plumage, but they usually have a brownish red to their chest too. So I don't know. That's interesting. I'm still leaning at blue grosbeak or indigo bunting.
We're out in the woods. Forestry Service is back behind us. And then I was going to ask you real quick. I know you got the people calling in. I've got to where I had to put the bird feeder on our back patio, because this time of year, I guess it's the starlings come through. They just take all the bird feed. You can't, and the other little birds don't have a chance. So it's nice looking at my back patio door, you know, watching all these birds, you know, on the feeder and on the concrete, because I didn't know what else to do, because you just don't put the food out because these other birds eat it all up.
I'm betting those are red-winged blackbirds, and the females are very streaked. And they'll just pig out at a feeder. And then the males don't always show the red this time of the year. They can really hide that red shoulder. I'm guessing a red-winged blackbird is what did it.
I've seen some with the red on, but a lot of them are just solid color, just masses of them. They make a lot of noise, and they're in the trees, just a lot of racket, but they don't stay that long. Of course, Louisiana, we've had it a lot warmer, like today. Uh-huh. It's in the 70s, and those birds have showed up sooner. We even got stuff that's starting to leaf out already,
right.
You know.
Another possibility, there's common grackles, and they move through, but they're really glossy, real shiny when the sun hits them, that you see some iridescence of blue, purple, bronzy, and they're really pretty. But if you know, it's hard to know, but I would say look at your book for female red-winged blackbird and common grackle, and I bet you it's one of those, and I'm leaning towards the red wing.
Well, is that the right thing to do, that not when these birds are coming through?
I think it's just a judgment call. I mean, some people like to see big numbers of things come to their feeder, but I think it's just up to you whether you want to do that or not.
Yeah, because see, they won't come up on the patio. You know, now I have to have some crows that have gotten so smart. My dog food pan on the back porch with some of these cardinals will even come up in the blue jays, and some of these birds I thought just ate bugs, and they'll come up, hop in that dog food pan and pack them off a big chunk of dog food, you know, the dry dog food.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I think it's just a judgment call if you want to feed or not to feed.
You are listening to Bird Calls from Red River Radio with our resident ornithologist Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We've got Janet from East Texas calling in right now, and we have phone lines open. Please go ahead and get your calls in right now. They always stack up at the end, so we want to get them in now. Don't wait until later. And we're going to go to Janet right now from East Texas. Janet, what's your question tonight?
Well, we wait till later thinking someone else will call and answer our questions.
Not likely, but go ahead.
Well, not tonight. Okay, my question is, it's not a question, maybe it's a concern.
Okay.
I have a bird feeder, and I'm very conscientious to make sure that it only gets fed when the ground is brown.
Mm-hmm.
And I have bluebirds come to my feeder.
Mm-hmm.
And I do also feed the nuts and fruits, and I know that I bought some feed that did not have, it wasn't fresh, and it had bugs in it.
Uh-huh.
And I kept those in, I always put my bird seed in the freezer to keep the bugs from coming in the house.
Right.
And the bluebirds come to my feeders.
Yeah.
They've been doing it, and I didn't notice it last year, but I noticed it this year. Maybe the weather's prettier.
Yeah, there could be some bugs in there that are just attracted to the seed, too, that they could be picking off. They could be just sitting there because they like it. But, I mean, bluebirds don't devour a lot of seed. So there's probably they might take a seed morsel here or there, but they don't camp out like a goldfinch or cardinal picking out on seed. So I'm guessing there might be something else going on. And you did say you put fruit out, and bluebirds eat a lot of fruit. So if you're putting raisins or apple or something like that, that's perfect for a bluebird because they'll eat a lot of mistletoe in the winter months and a lot of the berries that like hollies and stuff like that. So they do love berries. They're fruit eaters. Yeah.
My dog's barking.
Yeah.
Just saw something. And with a bluebird house, if it's got to be a specific
diameter,
because I've seen bluebirds. I work out in the field with the electric company, and I've seen them build in a vacant meter
and
I thought it had to be a certain hole, and this was a big hole, and they built this thing, and
They'll take what they can get, but the reason there's a certain diameter, it's to exclude other birds that want to use
protection.
It. Yeah, so it's to keep the starlings from using it, the maybe the house sparrows or the woodpeckers. So it's not because the bluebird necessarily wants it so tight. It's just trying to keep out other birds that are trying to to take that nest box away. And when you're intending to put it out for bluebirds, you want to do the maximum amount of things you can do to minimize the other species, right? So that's kind of the reason. But I have seen bluebirds in weird spots and big woodpecker cavities. I've seen them in a light fixture that was sagging in a carport at a family member's. And so I don't think anybody else would have found it. And what's interesting is you turn the light on and everything gets pretty darn warm. Maybe the bird liked that, but I thought that was weird.
Do you have to clean the nest out every year?
It's recommended that you do, yes. And because not only to get rid of whatever is in there, but a lot of that in our climate, a lot of that material gets pretty nasty with the humidity. And plus, nest building is a huge part of the pair bond. And is every year. So just because that pair bred there last year, they have to reinitiate all the, it's just like dating, you know, they got to do all the right steps when they're dating. They can't just fast forward to, all right, let's make babies. So making the nest is part of the whole process. So when you clean it out, they have something to do that's part of the pair bonding and part of the breeding season process.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Janet.
Well, thank you, Janet. And you are listening to Bird Calls from Red River Radio with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have Sonia up next. And Brian, please hang on the line. You're going to be after Sonia. Sonia, go ahead. What's your question tonight?
Hello. I was giving a Martin house with the long telescopic hole, mm-hmm. and I was wondering what instructions I needed in order to put in the right place,
right,
or you know, make sure I attract the martins.
That's a great question, and placement is super important for purple martins. If you put it under a canopy, guess what? They're not going to find it. They're not going to use it. It's got to be a pretty good opening, and I really like to recommend the Purple Martin Conservation Association. They're a national nonprofit, and they know everything and promote everything Purple Martin. And they would have on their website some information to help you. But in a nutshell, it needs to be open, an open field, no trees. And you know, just because you put it up doesn't mean it's going to work. We get a lot of folks calling and saying, I did everything you told me to, and it's not working. Well, you also find out later that person has a colony next door, and just because your neighbor has it doesn't mean you're going to pull in a whole new colony. Guess what? You and your neighbor are sharing the colony. Your neighbor just got lucky, got there first, and has grabbed that neighborhood colony. So you can't just start a new colony next door to another one. It just won't support that. So I would get on the PMCA website. That, again, is the Purple Martin Conservation Association website, and look for what other things they talk about. You're going to have to be vigilant about keeping out house sparrows. They're going to try to nest in there, maybe starlings. So if it's on a telescopic pole, that's good. You can bring it down, even if it's occupied by purple martins, to get away these guys that you don't want there, like the starlings and the house sparrows. But you know, it's not just because you put up a purple martin house, again, doesn't mean it's going to work. So be prepared for that. In other words, if you look at the PMCA website and you look at, you have to have an opening and you don't have that, don't go cutting 5 acres down just to put this thing up. Re-gift it, I'm sorry to say. Give it to somebody else that's out in more open country that could use it. But if you're in a forested setting, you're just going to have a tough time. And I certainly don't want to tell you to cut 3 to 5 acres of your trees down just to try to get a purple martin colony going. It's not a good idea. Okay, Sonia?
Okay, thank you.
Very good, thank you.
Bye-bye.
And speaking of trees, I just got a note from my wife. She heard me say that this isn't really the time to plant the wildscape, but she did remind me on a text here that this is the time to plant trees. So, yes, I was thinking of herbaceous stuff, wispy things. But this is the time when trees are dormant to plant those. So if you are planting trees that are good for wildlife, yes, the winter months. So thanks for reminded me of that. But I was thinking of more of the flowers and the grasses and things like that. That it's a little soon for that, but do the trees.
Yep. Tree, and trees are great all year. Yeah, they're great in every way.
That's right. And in the summertime is when you don't want to plant a tree. You don't really want to mess up a tree while it's growing. And especially the bigger the tree, the more susceptible it is to just collapsing. And right. So do it when it's dormant. Do it in the winter. Think of it being asleep and tiptoe and get him in the ground while he's still asleep. But don't do it in the summer when he's, you know, putting out that taproot and really trying to grab hold of things. Do it in the winter months.
You are listening to Bird Calls tonight from Red River Radio with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. Cliff is the non-game ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, a position he's had since 1997, and he's with us tonight to answer your questions. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. If you have a photograph and you want to send it to us, send it to redriverradiomail@gmail.com. We've got Brian from El Dorado next online. Brian, what's your question?
Well, I appreciate you taking my call, and you have to excuse me. I have a bit of a cold, but
everybody's
really about
got it.
Attracting birds. I recently put up a bird feeder. I've got three different types of feed in the same feeder. It's the type that has a little cage on each end, so you can put some mealworm cake or some suet in one end and mealworm cake in the other, and then a small seed in the middle. And I'm having to change out the burying the mealworm cake up in about 2 days.
Okay.
And but they haven't touched the suet.
Yeah, and is your suet staying in a solid form?
Yes.
Okay, because usually we have a problem with pure suet staying in a solid form, especially with the last few days of weather. They just melts in this heat, and then if fire ants are active, they really love coming up to that soot and eating from it. And, you know, so my experience with soot cakes and soot bars, it's really more of a northern thing where it's super cold and a lot of your insectivorous birds like woodpeckers maybe can't find anything in the trees or shallow in the trees. So they come, maybe the insects have bored deeper into the tree because I'm talking Duluth, Minnesota cold.
Right.
So they'll come to those soot feeders a lot more readily up in Minnesota than in Louisiana or Texas, in my experience. I don't know how else to explain it, but you're witnessing what I witness is you put this soot thing up and no one comes to it.
Right.
And I think there's just plenty of food for those critters that want that because the soot is basically for your insectivorous birds and your grub eaters. They're not going to be for the seed eaters. They're going to be for things like woodpeckers and blue jays and chickadees and things that will eat and nuthatches that are trying to look for more insects. I mean, some of those I listed do eat seeds too, but the woodpecker is a great example. He's really after the grubs, the insects, and when I say grubs, I'm talking about the larval stage of a lot of beetles that are in decaying wood, decaying trees, dead trees. So, and then your other item, what was the other thing you put on the other end?
It's a mealworm.
Mealworm, and you said no one's coming to that either?
No. They're eating that. I'm having to put a new cake up about every 2 days.
Well, there you go. I'd say get rid of the soot on the other end and run two ends of the mealworm. How about that?
Well, what kind of birds actually eat the mealworm cake?
Well, I've never run those, but certainly bluebirds, a lot of the bluebird fanciers really like putting out mealworms, period, for the bluebirds. So are you looking to see who's eating it? Because here's why. If it's something that a mammal can get to at night, like a hungry raccoon, you might be feeding coons and not birds.
No, well, I see a lot of birds out there. Uh-huh. The problem is, of course, I'm like everybody else. I work all day, and I get home at dark. So
Right.
I really only get to see them on the weekend.
Okay. But so you'd be able to answer what's there, or if you don't know what the birds are, snap a photo at the mealworm cake, and then send it to us, and we can help you identify it.
It sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, are there any other suggestions of other things that I could put out to attract more birds?
Well, you can't go wrong with black oil sunflower. It's readily available. You can find feeders to fill it with, and our southern birds will definitely come to it. You don't have to be from Duluth to like black old sunflower.
Sounds good. I appreciate the advice.
Yeah, and you're from El Dorado, Arkansas, because we have some Texas listeners, and we have an El Dorado, Texas, out in Schleicher County, which is kind of near Sonora, Texas. So anyway, so that's neat. You got Arkansas and Texas with
that's
the same
right.
same city name. So thanks for calling, Brian.
Texas and Arkansas are kind of brothers anyway.
That's right. until we play football, right?
Right. Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Go Hogs.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian.
All right.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. You can give us a call tonight, and all lines are open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question about our avian world? If you have a photograph, you can send it to us at redriverradiomail@gmail.com. That's redriverradiomail@gmail.com. I've got my annual What Is Up With My Mockingbird Chirping at 4 in the Morning in Early February question for you. Isn't this a little early for my mockingbird to be lonely at 4 a.m.?
I think it is. I think also it's unseasonably warm, and he's probably thinking that it's April when it's really not. But we've talked about probably your mockingbird in particular, and the evidence leans towards an unmated male who's in hyperdrive trying to find a girlfriend. So he's singing through the night just to try to up his chances of finding a mate. And I think that's important because a lot of people call, Parks and Wildlife, and they call complaining, I'm trying to sleep with the windows open, but this mockingbird keeps me awake all night. And when you tell him, hey, he's a lonely lover, he's got no love, and people go, oh, that's sad, and they have a little bit more sympathy when you put it that way. But usually what's also going on is there's a night light, a parking lot night light, or some kind of a security light that you have. If you turn that off, if it's private, you might eliminate your problem. If you're in a parking lot apartment where you don't have that ability to turn the light off, you're probably going to have to move if you don't like it, because you're not going to get anybody to turn lights off when security is of the
right.
biggest concern, human security. But the bird's taking advantage of the light. And, you know, what's interesting about lights, I've seen lighted boat docks. You'll see herons feeding at night by aid of the light. You'll see in the summertime eastern kingbirds and scissor-tailed flycatchers feeding around lights at 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only because they're taking advantage of the lights. You'll see at the Capitol in Austin when I lived there, you'd see dozens of common nighthawks feeding on the moths coming to the light. It made feeding for them a lot easier. So the nighthawk's supposed to feed at night, but he was certainly taking advantage of the clustering of insects to those lights.
I thought I was going to have to go out and give him a card for eHarmony or something like that, because he drives me crazy sometimes at 4 in the morning, because he's right outside my door in a crepe myrtle tree.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, right outside my window. Of course, there's no lights from my window, but I do live in an apartment complex, so there's security lights and everything.
Yeah, so Match.com hasn't really made it to the bird world yet.
Yeah,
so this is, this is their equivalent.
You are listening to Bird Calls from Red River Radio with Cliff Shackelford. We've got time for a few more calls at 800-552-8502, but get them in quick because we're running out of time. And we do have Johnny from Ola, Louisiana. Go ahead with your question tonight, Johnny.
Yeah, hey, Cliff. Question you about perennial plants, or plants that you can put around your house for birds. You touched on it just a little bit ago, but what would be some good plants you could plant for overwintering birds or summer birds or just in general?
Well, for summer birds, I recommend perennial plants that, of course, have color, but they have nectar value. And sometimes those planets don't align perfectly. But when they do, they can be really great for hummingbirds and butterflies. And I really think that Turk's cap, the native lantana, any of the native salvias, these are all perennials that would be really good for birds, and what we do, and my wife's better at it than me, is she leaves a lot of the lantana stems up in the winter, even though there's no color. There's the cover for our white-throated sparrows. We have brown thrashers. They're both skulking around in the leaf litter under what used to be a lantana patch that now looks like a boneyard. The lantana is still standing, but there's no green, no orange, no color, but it's still good cover. So what I'm getting at is plant the lantana, but don't remove it until later in the winter or early spring to allow the white-throated sparrows and the brown thrashers, and maybe if you're lucky, if you have a towhee or any of these other shrub-occurring birds that would use that. But I would say, again, my top picks would be Turk's cap, lantana. Make sure it's the native one. You can get the one that's predominantly pink that's not native and has very little to no nectar value. So you'd be putting out lantana, but you get the prettiness, but you wouldn't get the nectar. So get the native lantana. It's an orange. It's beautiful. And you won't leave the house in October because the butterflies are just stunning. And then before that, the hummingbirds really love it too. So I really love those. The salvias, they're going to be varied colors, some red ones, some blue ones, some purple ones. Try to go for the native kind in your area, and those are super good for these birds as well. I'm mixing annuals and perennials, but I think the whole point is if you're getting started, really good to try to get perennials because it's a lot less work, but there's some good annuals as well to mess with. Those are my picks for your backyard gardening.
Thank you.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Johnny.
Thanks for calling in, Johnny, and you are listening to Bird Calls from Red River Radio with Cliff Shackelford. Cliff is the statewide non-game ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, and we're grateful to them for letting us borrow him for these shows. And we're going to close out, as we do generally, with our conservation tip this month. And what do you have for us this month, Cliff?
Okay, in this episode, the conservation tip, we're going to discuss seed feeders. How appropriate, since we got so many calls about that today. But I frequently hear folks comment that they want to attract more birds to their yard, so they'd like to put up a seed feeder. And while feeders in the winter can supplement native food, the best thing you can do to attract birds is to also operate a year-round bird bath where songbirds can drink and bathe and also put in a wildscape. So it's not just putting a feeder up, it's doing those three things: a bird feeder, a bird bath, and a wildscape, native plants for birds. So that being said, it's a lot of fun to watch birds at a feeder. So a few tips. First, consider proper placement of any feeder on your property. To avoid windowkills, don't place your feeder too close to the window. And avoid placing your feeder adjacent to dense shrubs where the neighbor's cat might be hiding and pouncing on any unsuspecting bird visiting your feeder. You can't go wrong with black oil sunflower seed. It's a favorite in our backyard bird feeder. Store your seed in a cool, dry place. A warm and humid location can produce sweaty seed, which can grow a harmful and often deadly chemical called aflatoxin. And for this reason, I don't recommend running feeders during the hot summer months. There's plenty of natural food available during that time of the year. Give your feeders a periodic cleaning so the birds stay healthy. And remember not to gauge bird abundance in your area by the activity at your feeder. So uneaten seed does not mean that the sky is falling. Instead, it could mean that Mother Nature has provided a buffet of fresh food elsewhere in the neighborhood. So most of all, enjoy watching birds come to your feeders, and this can be the best place to open your eyes to the wonderful world of birds. Enjoy the birds.
All right. Cliff, thank you again for coming in tonight and helping us out with this great show.
Great. Thank you, Bill.
You have been listening to Bird Calls with Cliff Shackelford. He is our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio and the statewide non-game ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. We want to thank the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department for all their help in helping us create this show, and Cliff again for joining us tonight. This has been Bird Calls from Red River Radio. I'm your producer, along with Cliff Shackelford. We had help tonight from Wally Derleth, Henry Edwards, and Tim Snell. The audio for tonight's program will be posted in a couple of hours on our website, so you can re-listen to this show or share it with your friends at redriverradio.org. And remember, if you have a photo or sound clip of a bird, that is great. That helps us out, and Cliff loves to identify those, so send those to wbeckett@lsus.edu. Stay tuned, we have Radio Lab coming up next here on Red River Radio.